appreciating Prabhupada's letters. We're having these lectures of different ways to appreciate Prabhupada. And so now we're discussing his letters. And we were going over with reading samples of Prabhupada's letters under different categories. Some of that we were reading, some of what we call the domestic letters, where we get intimate views of Prabhupada and early days of ISKCON, medical advice and marriage advice. And then we were showing how Prabhupada is constantly encouraging in his letters, how not only he's saying encouraging things, but the devotees were definitely being sustained by these encouraging words. Letters were also a vehicle for management, because, of course, very quickly, Srila Prabhupada had centers in many different places, and so, especially since he never liked to use a telephone, mainly because of its cost, so he used to conduct management by writing letters. Here are some letters of management when there still wasn't very much to manage, but in the beginning, showing that he expected things to come back to him. 1969, about back to Godhead. I've noted the contents. Regarding Hari Griva and Satsarupa, I think they can become joint editors and articles to be published in BTG may be jointly decided upon. In case of disagreement, the matter should be referred to me. I shall give the final decision. And another letter to another devotee who must have asked Prabhupada if he can decide things on his own. So far, the distribution of funds, temple management, which you have mentioned, if one is sincere, the dictation how to do it rightly will come from within. It is stated that those who are engaged in the service of the Lord in pure love and devotion, to them dictation is given from within their hearts. But still, you should check with me. If one is very cautious, then Krishna will give him protection. One should not become callous, he should be cautious. So Prabhupada was, as you can see, he was material authority as well as spiritual authority. Of course, everything with him was spiritual, but in the sense of making decisions, having the power, the authority to make decisions about how money is spent and what should be done, we can call that material power. Whereas we may think of a spiritual person as just giving advice, but the people who make the decisions, who have the control, they're somebody else. But in Prabhupada's case, as we particularly see through the letters, he had both authorities, and he never misused them. He would have liked to have turned over the so-called material authority, but it was not possible. With reference to Gaurisundara's letter that I am being overloaded with mail lately, in other words, Prabhupada said, I am being overloaded with mail. It is not meant for you. I must have sufficient correspondence with the main pillars of the society. You are one of them, so you are at liberty to write me as many letters as is required. Sometimes I receive many letters from devotees with questions which could be solved in the Istogosti meetings. Especially your letters and Brahmananda's letters and Gargamuni's letters, I take special care and reply each of them. Get a sense of the vital nature of the correspondence. We were talking about how the letters were composed with secretaries, and one of the devotees in their notes wanted to hear more about that. Like everything in Prabhupada's life, that was part of his routine. I'm trying to think when he would answer letters when I was there. I think it was in the morning. And, of course, when special letters came, somebody like Giriraj Swami, then anything about Bombay, he'd want to see right away. But otherwise, you'd bring the mail in at a certain time and open the letters. And not that Prabhupada heard every letter from beginning to end, but the secretary's job was to read them beforehand and like underline them and read what was important, what was especially a question. And then, as Prabhupada felt inspired or prompted, he would speak sometimes very, very briefly, or sometimes he'd speak at length. And the secretary was supposed to take notes and then later type up a letter based on that. That's a little bit of his routine. Management, of course, means money. And Prabhupada didn't shy away from dealing with the money. In the beginning it was simple, later it got really quite heavy, all the different things he was deciding on. Here's an early letter. Regarding Macmillan, for our missionary work, we want to distribute more books at a lower price. If they want to increase the price, then terminate the agreement. You must see the contract. If they can increase the price whimsically, consult with lawyers if the agreement can be terminated. If we can print the Bhagavad Gita at a lower cost, why they are insisting to print themselves at a higher cost? We can give them a press who can print at a lower cost, so why they are insisting to print at a higher cost? And then there was a letter regarding the legal possession of Prabhupada's rooms at Radhadamodar in Vrindavan. He paid for those rooms and rented them, but there's always been some quarreling, trying to raise the price or take possession. So Prabhupada gave some instructions. Regarding this letter from Gorchan Goswami, the original position is that these two rooms and the entrance veranda were in very dilapidated condition. He says that a donation is owed by me. He is making blackmail against me, therefore we have to bring this matter to the rent court or magistrate in Mathura. So it's not that the Jagat Guru only talks about Krishna and Srimad Bhagavatam, but he has to deal with Krishna's energy and with Krishna's movement. And that's also spiritual, that management done for Krishna. As Prabhupada encouraged, he also chastised or reprimanded his disciples. He used to say that that was his duty, not that he was supposed to flatter them. There was one letter, I don't have it here, but the disciple wrote that you seem to be criticizing me, or not in the last letter, and the implication was that was wrong, or something was wrong if the guru was doing that. And after all, the disciple is serving sincerely. Why is the spiritual master criticizing such sincere service? Well, Prabhupada wrote back and explained that that his business was not to flatter the disciple, but to try to improve his service. He had to find faults, and then the person could improve. Like he wrote about his spiritual master, you hold the mace, you have the right. So the disciple has to give that right to the spiritual master to also correct him and accept it. So here's a letter. I understand from Shamsunda that you have engaged all our Sankirtan members of Amsterdam to work in a cigarette factory. I do not know how you could dare to do this without asking me or any other GBC members. Amsterdam is doing nicely in Sankirtan party collections. Why they should go to work in a cigarette factory? In your last letter to me, also you tried to impress me that everyone should go to work. Another one, 1971. GBC does not mean to control a center. GBC means to see that the activities of a center go on nicely. I do not know why blank is exercising his absolute authority. That is not the business of GBC. The president, treasurer, and secretary are responsible for managing the center. GBC is to see that things are going nicely, but not to exert absolute authority. That is not the power of GBC. He should not do like that. The GBC man cannot impose anything on the men of his center without consulting all the GBC members first. So he could even criticize his top managers. But unlike when somebody criticizes somebody else in this world, it usually produces a long dissension and there's grudge. But Prabhupada, if he showed anger toward a disciple, he never held it or thought about it in a grudging way. But he would again take up with that person with all the kindness and of their usual relationship when they met again. I have a little indication of that. I am simply sorry that such intelligent boys are misusing their brain substance in this way. I try to rectify them as far as possible. Well, that was when some sannyasi disciples of his were misled. It's not that Prabhupada, although Prabhupada took some strong action against them at first, he wanted them to come back as soon as possible. And then there was a girl, one of the first girls to leave her husband and act independent. That caused a shock to the movement. And Prabhupada even wrote to her, "My dear Krishna Devi, please accept my blessings. I'm expecting you at every moment. Krishna is very kind. He does not let go anyone who might have done a little bit of service. How can he allow you to forget Krishna? You may be dragged by Maya for the time being, but by Krishna's grace, that will only have temporary reaction." And another devotee who caused a lot of difficulty, and Prabhupada wrote about him, "I may inform you that I always think of him and pray to Krishna for his good sense. That is my duty. Anyone who comes to me for my help or wants advance in Krishna consciousness and whom I initiate and accept as my disciple, I must pray for him and his welfare always. So he personally served me, especially during my illness, which I always remember. But because somehow or other he has misunderstood our activities, that does not mean that I am no longer his well-wisher. I write at the end of my letters to my disciples, your ever-well-wisher." So to Srila Prabhupada, some naughty followers have to be punished and some are being praised, but his love is there for all of them, especially if the rebellious ones will stop their nonsense and come back and act rightly. There are different services that people are doing for the spiritual master and doing in the Krishna consciousness movement. And the support for doing those services, even now, so many years after Prabhupada's disappearance, is gained often from direct instructions and which were conveyed in letters. So Prabhupada's letters about particular services are main impetuses and supports for those things. In regard to a book distribution, usually when book distribution leaders are encouraging other devotees to do so, they'll mostly refer to Prabhupada's letters, although also his purports, but the letters especially. I'll just read an example of that. "There is no doubt about it, to distribute books is our most important activity. The temple is a place, not for eating and sleeping, but as a base from which we send out our soldiers to fight with Maya. Fight with Maya means to drop thousands and millions of books into the laps of the conditioned souls. Just like during wartime, the bombs are raining from the sky like anything." So there are so many letters about book distribution that they can fill a whole book. But other services, there may just be a few letters, But for people who are doing those services, that authorization is very important. So I'm reading these samples just to give us an impression of the place of the letters in Prabhupada's Vani. Although we were earlier talking about there's a certain relative nature of the letters, now we're appreciating how they continue to be important evidence. So here are some letters with less, what shall we say, services that seem to get less attention. But these letters are very important for the people who are doing them. I am very pleased that you are running for mayor of such an important city as Atlanta. Now you present to the populace this perfect example of Krishna-conscious person, and always be very clean and neat. You may present the simple program to the citizens for becoming purified and regaining their lost happiness by meeting together frequently to chant Hare Krishna. We have no complicated political platform. And he goes on about political platform. Another letter. I'm very encouraged by your proposal to flood the medias of your country with our Krishna conscious program. See that it's taking practical shape under your hands. I am more pleased. It's nice that they hear our Krishna show and that the people are ordering the Krishna book. It's a good way to induce people for accepting our philosophy. I know there's one letter where Prabhupada says that, I think it's to Rabindra Swarup Prabhu, where he says that yes, you should go ahead and study at the university to become a religions professor. Our men should become the chairman of the religion departments. And although it was to one person, other people have taken that letter as encouragement to do that. For directing services. Well, these are some samples of letters in different categories of uses. Now, let's look at some letters in chronological order. We were pointing out the other night how Prabhupada evolved. We read about how his first attitude toward Grihasthas, and then how he got a little disappointed. So you see an evolution of all different attitudes from the early days to later days in different ways. Not always that he was optimistic and later disappointed, but all different kinds of evolutions. So I've divided into three areas of before he came to the United States, then the 1960s forming ISKCON, and the 1970s to the end. In the 40s and 50s and 60s, when Prabhupada was in India, if you want to analyze his letters, he was mostly a Grihastha, and letter writing was quite different than what we mostly think of when we think of Prabhupada's letters, which are to disciples. But he was mostly preaching to people who were influential, who he hoped would hear him in the letter and hopefully meet with him and be convinced to take to Krishna consciousness. And there were people who would be in a position to actually do something. Someone asked a nice question in the questions that you submitted. Can we learn from Prabhupada's letters how we ourselves can write letters? That's nice. And yes, we can. If we write to other devotees, we should try to encourage them as he did. Not that we imitate Prabhupada. Similarly, this spirit of writing as preaching is nice. If you see something in the newspaper and letters to the editor, you can write a letter to the editor, or you can write a letter to someone and try to take up begin some correspondence with a person. This would be in the spirit of Prabhupada before he came to America. He did that kind of preaching by letter. the most famous of which is his letter to Mahatma Gandhi, but it's also typical of the other ones, asking the big man to consider what is the purpose of life and how he's in illusion with his present program, how he should take time and hear this message of going back to Godhead, as Prabhupada says when he wrote to the president of India, I am not a madman. Don't think I'm a madman when I say that I'm going back to Godhead, but we can all go back to Godhead. Eternal life. Trying to make them pause and consider and take time out and use Prabhupada as he was volunteering himself to preach Krishna consciousness. Of course, mostly these letters were ignored. But that's not the preacher's concern. He just tries to reach people. He tried to engage money, asking people to, just like he wrote to the Mahatma Gandhi memorial, where they wanted to spend some money in Mahatma Gandhi's honor. Prabhupada said, I beg to suggest that you commemorate Mahatma Gandhi in the Gandhian way and not otherwise. His life was dedicated to the service of humanity at large, with special interest for raising the moral standard. And so he goes on in that way, asking that money be spent for Krishna. Prabhupada used to say that if you speak to a influential person and you don't draw some service from him, then the talk is incomplete, especially with these men of action. You try to engage them into some kind of service. So the letters were motivated in that way. Prabhupada was very ambitious, although he was so poor. In one letter he says, please write to me, I'm moving. He was living with somebody and he was going to have to move in a few days. Please write to this address. I don't know where I'm going to be next, something to that effect. And there's one letter where it's very, he makes a very amusing, ironic statement. He's writing to another man, telling about how he had a disappointing meeting with some judge or big influential person. And he said that he received me and he gave me 10 rupees and a glass of milk, but my mission was not fulfilled. So sometimes they think that they'll pacify a sadhu just by, because he's only begging, and so give him a little money and something to eat and send him away. So as a sadhu, Prabhupada accepted that, but he said my mission was not fulfilled, because his mission was so ambitious. Somebody asked me, what about Prabhupada's letters from Grihastha life? And actually, there is a letter in which Prabhupada asked that they be burned. And that was done. He had a lot of letters at Radha Damodar temple, and he asked his disciple in India, Guru Das, to burn them. Because they were apparently mostly filled with business and family affairs, just like the few letters that we do have. So it's not important that we be curious about Prabhupada's letters as a businessman. Now, going on to Prabhupada's letters in the 1960s, when he was forming ISKCON, and though I was saying how later the secretary would be there, but in the beginning, Prabhupada personally typed the letters, and then when he started using the dictaphone, he dictated letters. And he didn't keep that up, though. That was a little too much to dictate every letter. And he would just say some things, and the secretary would write some things down. But in the beginning days, you would have tapes of his letters. So here again, We can look at some of this domestic spirit, but it doesn't. Domestic means like his disciples are like a spiritual family, and he's very close to them, giving them all kinds of intimate advice about their lives. But at the same time, pushing them on in the pioneer spirit. We read the other night how, in connection with his initial attitudes towards Grihastha life, that he thought of Grihasthas as couples that would go out. He said, we'll colonize the world and send a couple to different places all over the world to start Krishna consciousness centers. So, domestic and pioneering both. You can tell these letters from later letters because they're filled with Prabhupada's diction and word usage much more than the later letters are. He's writing, and just like a friend will write to another friend and say your friend goes out to California, and then he gets there and he writes you back what the airplane trip was like and what I did there, all these little details, because you're interested in him and he's interested to tell you. Whereas, if you're too busy for that, or if you're a very official public person, you don't have time for such things, or not inclination. But Prabhupada, he had that side to him, and when he was able to do that, he did it. So he's writing back to his disciples. He says, I delivered a lecture in San Francisco State College, and the students enjoyed the atmosphere very much. They heard our kirtan very attentively, and although my lecture was a little terse on account of our prohibitory regulations, still the students heard me very attentively, and they stood around me even after the meeting was over. One girl questioned me why I am against meat eating, and she was very satisfactorily replied. Today also in the morning I lectured and held sankirtan in a local WMCA building, and there were small children almost within 10 years along with their teachers, and they patiently enjoyed our company for 1 hour. In your last letter, you informed me that you are holding class in kirtan in your college, and I will be glad to know the reaction. You will be pleased also to learn that Rupanuga Dasarakari has gone to Buffalo to open a branch there, and his report is also very encouraging. So when Prabhupada would do that, he would write to somebody and say what somebody else was doing, and it was like a nudge, you know, why don't you do something like that? So-and-so has done some very nice preaching. And that was very effective when we would get letters like that. It's like you hear the gopis. One gopi sees that somebody pleases Krishna and they want to do something nice for Krishna. Because Prabhupada was very always genuine, and he was really pleased that Rupanuga had gone to Buffalo. And it just made you think, well, you should do something. And here's another letter. Janaki, I was thinking of you since about a week. Why you are silent? And all of a sudden I got your letter with a golden ring enclosed. It was so much ecstatic. I thank you very much for your kind presentation which you have given, even sacrificing your husband's interest. Sounds like she sent the wedding ring. I think though that your husband Mukunda is also pleased with this action. Anyway, immediately upon receipt of this ring I pushed it on my finger and it is very nice. That obviously wasn't dictated, wasn't written by a secretary or something. For dishes, best... Oh, this is... introduce this. We're talking about early letters. So early letters are charming and amusing because things are very small, too. There's one letter when Prabhupada had what was actually a big engagement with Allen Ginsberg at Ohio State University. 1,000 people came. But there were letters about trying to get Madranga. They had one Madranga and they were trying to get another Madranga. And so could so-and-so come from, drive from a big distance from another center and bring a Madranga. The movement was so small that there was, in the whole country, there was only a few Madrangas. And letters were going back and forth about that kind of thing. And here's another one in that mood. In Prabhupada giving instruction about dishwashing. For dishes, best thing is everyone who is eating prasadam should wash his plate. Otherwise, one man has to do so many dishes. So even the guests should also wash their dishes. That is the system in the temple, not leave one man to do it. Early letters, another characteristic, very optimistic. Everything is expanding, everything is hopeful. Prabhupada feels that his students are exemplary compared to any other persons, and they can be tested. And this is another evidence of Krishna consciousness philosophy. So you get this waves of optimism as you read them now. Of course, sometimes when you read it now, you may have the effect of disappointing us that, oh, there was so much hope, and that hope was not realized in certain ways. But although there is that's a fact, rather we should try to use that energy, that optimistic energy, when we see it there, and try to regain it in a realistic way, what was there, and rather than just lament that it was a time of optimism and now we can't have that optimism again. We can, although it may be different. Just like when you're very young, you're full of physical energy and enthusiasm, and you may lose that later, but you can channel your energy in another way and still be enthusiastic for them, especially for spreading the mission of Krishna consciousness. So, as the time goes by, looking at Prabhupada's letters in the 1970s, there's less philosophy in the letters. If you study them, I think you'll find that. Of course, all this we were saying, we can talk about Prabhupada's letters now. We have these 5-volume sets, everyone can look at them. One reason is that early there were no books, and people were asking questions of Prabhupada, what is the super soul, and things like that. So he would answer it in a letter. So later he said that that should be done by reading the books. You have asked a very important question. I'm glad you've asked me, but I think from now on the GBC men may be consulted in all such matters of temple management and affairs. I've given them everything, so they should be able to answer all questions. And if they cannot, from their experience, then I've given the answer in my books. And if still they cannot answer, then you may ask me. But now we are expanding very rapidly with so many centers throughout the world. Every day I'm receiving not less than 10 to 15 important letters. I am always very much encouraged to hear from my disciples and reply to them, but I am an old man and I have inclination for philosophy and translating, and if all day and night I am reading and answering and signing letters, then I cannot utilize this fag end of my life to give you so many nice literatures like the Vedas, Upanishads, Puranas, Ramayana, Mahabharata, and other books in our Gaudiya line, like Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti, and others. So he wanted to write books and couldn't answer questions anymore about what is the super soul. Therefore, you'll find less philosophy. And as the movement expanded, there's more management, so there's more management in the letters. And some of them, it's almost like you get the image in a transcendental sense, it's like Prabhupada is really on the spot, like some big executive you see it, or I don't know if you've seen it in the movies, with 10 telephones on the desk, and picks up, yes, buy 1,000 shares, and then something else. Well, Prabhupada is practically like that, and some of his letters come out real direct and only management. Here's one I picked out. Dear Mahamsa Swami, I'm in due receipt of your letter with enclosed copies of the master plan and cost estimate of the Hyderabad land. Who has drawn this big scheme and where to get the money? I wanted simple life. What is the Nature Cure Hospital? The first scheme is how to get food grains. What is the scheme of getting this money? Will Hamsa Dutta supply? Then I have no objection. Hamsa Dutta will be president of this scheme. I will go in my quarters there, nothing more. The idea is good. I hope this meets you in good health. So it's like, nothing like you may apply some cloves for your toothache. But having to deal with, and then disciples throwing things at him. Here's like, here's a big huge temple we want to build. And they don't say where the money's coming from. It's as if Prabhupada is going to become the architect and figure everything out. So so many things are being thrown at him. And in the letters, sometimes you see he's trying to give it back. We see from letters like this that Prabhupada... the letters are mostly to... Not only... They're not to non-devotees so much, but they're not even to devotees. As the time goes by, they're only to the leaders of the devotees. He cannot... What can Prabhupada do? He wants to write books, otherwise it's going to be day and night answering every letter by every devotee. Of course, this was a disappointment to devotees that only the people with the big positions in the temple could write, but we have to sympathize from Prabhupada's point of view that it wouldn't be possible to answer all those letters. And so you get letters mostly to leaders, and the orientation is for action rather than philosophy. So if we're reading the letters and we want to, like when we read Srimad Bhagavatam, we want to get nourished and we want to be instructed with transcendental life, we want the darshan of Krishna. You could say then as the letters go on, they're less interesting. But if we're studying Prabhupada, then we maintain our interest, and we sympathize with him, and we enter more into understanding all the things he had to do. So even though there's less philosophy, we get to understand Prabhupada nicely. I'm glad that you have admitted about the GBC members not appropriately discharging their duty. This must have been to a GBC member. Yeah. I do not mind this discrepancy, but you should be alert, you and all GBC members. We are now growing in volume all over the world dealing with public money. People have respect for our movie, for our movement. Anyway, this is an example of action-oriented and two leaders. The top leader talking to his cabinet, so to speak, and expecting them to deal nicely with everything. But they're not always doing it. So despite what I've just been saying about action-oriented and business and money and things like that, there are some themes that are constant through all the periods. No matter how busy Prabhupada was, he was always ready to preach. So some of the things that you'll find constantly in all the letters are advice to be dependent on the holy name of Krishna. Here's one where a boy was put into prison and he went on chanting. In every kind of miseries, we have to depend on Krishna and we should not be too much disturbed. You have shown very great example in sticking yourself to chanting Hare Krishna while you were in tribulation. Follow this practice all your life and surely Krishna will accept you into the kingdom of God. And another theme in all the letters is that he had a missionary purpose. That's the water. Prabhupada had a mission, and he wanted his followers to take it up. Because you're doing the field work of book distribution, Krishna has immediately recognized them as true servants, just like during wartime, a farm boy or ordinary clerk who goes to fight for his country immediately becomes a national hero. Now, I said that philosophy started to diminish, but philosophy is always there. And although the letters are not the main source of philosophy compared to the books, it's a fact that you find some things in the letters that at least I've never found elsewhere. And some of them are almost like exotic, because there they are, and you don't know whether they were written, they were stated casually by Prabhupada, or whether exactly how they fit into the overall pramanas. I can think of a couple of things I saw in a letter. I'm sure these things are in scriptures, it's just that we may not have read them all. But I remember, not having seen elsewhere, Prabhupada wrote in a letter that Arjuna is not in the spiritual world, but he's always with Krishna somewhere in the material world, wherever Krishna goes. And I had never thought of that. And that there's a letter to Bhagavan where Prabhupada says that Jesus Christ is in the Brahmaloka. Those who worship Jesus Christ go to Brahmaloka. So things like that come in the letters. Not just casually, but some things are quite developed also in letters. After all, it's not that different. It's the same Prabhupada, and he's writing his book, or he's talking to his secretary to put into the letter. He can preach on any occasion, or preaching in the evening lecture. So some things like that you'll find in letters. But, in Prabhupada, he always gave advice for practical, not only preaching, but practical activities of sadhana, and telling people that they should read, and they should serve, and they should chant. Lord Chaitanya warned about reading too many books. Although I see in America this is very popular to get volumes and volumes of books and not understand one. And a very constant theme is that you should do the routine duties, or follow the routine duties. With temple life means early rising, going to Mangala Arati, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, chanting your rounds. Again and again, he advises like that. If we are not careful to stick to the point of regular principles and purest standards of high living, then everything will spoil very quickly and the whole show will be a farce. So impress this point in your preaching for training the younger devotees. In another letter, without the four principles, there is no spiritual life. Even it may be very difficult to follow. You should reject anything or anyone who advises you to break these principles. Association with such persons is worse than poison. Maybe now I'll go over the questions that you submitted to me last night. I have some more letters, but maybe I'll just read a few of the really nectar ones, because that was one of the questions. Someone said they wanted to hear some more of those really sweet letters. Here's a real nice one. Prabhupada wrote in 1967 when he left New York and went to San Francisco, and it speaks for itself, but it's really like the spiritual father rather than the spiritual master. I have received your letter. I'm surprised to note that the temperature of New York has gone down below zero and there was a regular snow blizzard for 2 days. Certainly this situation would have been a little troublesome for me because I'm an old man. I think Krishna wanted to protect me by shifting here at San Francisco. Here the climate is certainly like India and I'm feeling comfortable, but uncomfortable also because at New York I felt at home on account of so many beloved students like you. As you are feeling my absence, so I am feeling for you, but we are all happy on account of Krishna consciousness, either here or there. The whole letter is really nice. Again, telling what what Prabhupada is doing there in San Francisco. I'll just read it from here and there in the letter. He had an engagement at the Christian Yoga Church. There were 100 respectable gathering. All the ladies and gentlemen were cultured and decent, and all of them appreciated our kirtan and lectures. They profusely garlanded me and exposed me for photo snaps. Ranjur played the harmonium, and they were pleased with his playing and garlanded him. They handed over to me some collection, about $12, and most probably they will invite us again for such performances. Okay, let's look at some of these questions. They're not easy questions. Well, here's one question I'll ask for anyone to answer. Are there any letters you have read by Prabhupada that are particularly memorable to you or were helpful to you in your spiritual life? Either a letter you got or that someone else got that you read. Would someone like to tell us? Well, Bhaja, can you think of a letter that was real important to you?
There was a letter that I received. There was letters also that we got as a temple early on, mostly to Govindadasi, encouraging us all to preach nicely and to push on Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement.
That was what you reminded me, like the letter might be, any letter to that center would be shared by the devotees of that center.
A lot of times it had all of our names on it. And even if it didn't, he would always say, please give my my blessings to Turidas and Jayashri. And we only had a few devotees at that time. He would always say like that to make sure to give his blessings to each and every one of us. And that would encourage us to... because, you know, during this Degoshi, we read the letter, and just to have Prabhupada give his blessings to us, personally, you know, naming each one of us was so exhilarating. Yeah.
Any special letter? I try to think myself in the... there are a lot of letters like that, so it was hard to think of one letter. So I mostly thought of like the general act of receiving a letter and how it was so wonderful and reading it. Even the sensual part of it, you know, opening the letter and looking at the type, and it wasn't a small thing. You really get excited. And then showing it to others and getting it back, and then memorizing parts of it and thinking about it like a mantra. I think of it more in general than a particular letter. Just that you wanted to keep getting them. Another one and another one. But of course there were some memorable letters. Since Prabhupada's books are the law books for the next 10,000 years, should we not use his letters as another source of authoritative directives from the Guru, even if in a limited manner? Would you like to answer that?
Actually, sometimes this argument comes up, and we always say you can't quote, you know, these letters, time and circumstance, but it seems like everybody does it.
Yeah.
When you want to, if you're trying to make a point and you want some support, why not use Prabhupada's letters if he did say something about it? So I think it's natural to do that, but also we do have to sometimes try to be honest about in particular circumstances when the letter not yeah. use something out of context to support yeah. a particular point. In other words, just to try to see the instruction, not try to prove something by taking some letter that really doesn't apply. But I think it's naturally always you're going to do that. Prabhupada
yeah.
said this. And sometimes, like you were just saying about how the philosophy, he didn't give so much philosophy, but he gave, in the later years, but I was thinking how he gave application of philosophy in the later years quite often. And the ones, the times that he did it later, even though they're on the same point as he might have spoken of earlier, they have more, they carry more weight if you're trying to figure out, you know, what did Prabhupada think of some particular issue. So if you can quote a letter in 1976 instead of one in 1969, that it makes a difference.
So that you don't say, well, that was in the early days and things changed.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think definitely there's, that we take from that, it's naturally authorizing.
So it appears then as long as Prabhupada's reputation lasts and his book lasts, that people that his letters are going to be there too. That's part of his opus.
There's one realization you said about his letters about being smriti and shruti. I don't know how it goes. Yeah. Maybe you could explain.
Just like we have the shruti and the smriti, and the and sometimes the Vedic scholars they accept only shruti, only the four Vedas, but the more broad-minded Vaishnavas like Rupa Goswami and Madhvacharya, they told us shruti, smriti, purana, pancharatra, all of these things. We accept Mahabharata, Puranas. So similarly, Prabhupada's letters, we can accept them in that sense.
Nice.
And Prabhupada's, the Shruti is his Bhagavatam, and the Smriti is his letters that are additional. They're in the same. They don't deviate, of course, from the purports of the books that he's already written. I'm
trying to write down these good ideas. All right. I would like to understand more about the nature of the differences that would appear in Prabhupada's letters as a result of differing time, place, and circumstance. For example, in the situation you read, dealing with business is good or business is bad, what would cause him to take different positions? Did he mean that the temples as organizations should not do business, but that individual grihasthas could? Well, you're really asking to focus in on that particular question about business. Because we'd have to, like with any issue, we'd have to get all the letters and look at them carefully. That one point you're making, that's one of the points, that he said that the temples should run by book distribution, that was the best business. But nobody should be forced, whatever somebody wanted to do for Krishna, he should do it and make money for Krishna. It's hard to answer this without actually talking at length about this business issue, which might take us a little off the track. But we can say on principle, though, that there was, that when he said business was good and then when he said business was bad, it was because of the particular circumstance involved in the person and the place. Judged by the result, if somebody is doing business and then he's in Maya, and although he's doing business, no money is given to Krishna, and book distribution is not going on, well then that's not a very good result. But like he said, somebody's making $1 million for Krishna, why do you say that that's Maya? And he's a nice devotee, why discourage him? So partly by the result he would be guided to say that something was good or bad. A lot of things were like that with Prabhupada, that if you did something and you did it nicely, then he'd be pleased with it. He wasn't like stuck on principles, but on Krishna conscious behavior and results. For example, even if Prabhupada asks somebody to do something, say be temple president of some place, and he depended on him, and that person couldn't do it, which was a real disappointment to Prabhupada. If then that person did something else and succeeded in it, then he would be pleased with them. He just wanted to see people fixed up and doing what they could to spread Krishna consciousness. It's a tricky thing to know the background. The more you know, then the better you can understand why he said something was good and then said something was bad. To what extent should one look to the letters for instruction? How does one avoid taking a letter with a specific instruction and applying it to his own case, which may or may not be similar? Somebody want to answer that? We've touched on, it seems like, some of these things already. Well, partly that requires your intelligence. If something really doesn't apply to you, then how can you consider that as an instruction to you? You have to be intelligent. And as Nagaraj Prabhu mentioned, we have to be unmotivated in the way we approach them. And then we can get instruction. You may need guidance in looking at the letters, guidance from other devotees. As grand disciples of Srila Prabhupada, is it valid for us to look to the letters from Prabhupada to our spiritual master in order to learn more about our spiritual master's mission? Seems valid. To know your spiritual master's relationship to Srila Prabhupada seems to be an important thing, because everyone is a follower, a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. So they want to know about Prabhupada. And then reading Prabhupada's letters to your spiritual master, that gives you a very interesting insight. And it says here, in order to know our spiritual master's mission. Yes? Of course, you can hear it from your spiritual master also, what Prabhupada wrote to him and why he did. But it could help you to become a better disciple. If you were familiar with that, and if you could bring that up to your spiritual master in a helpful way, that, well, yes, as Srila Prabhupada wrote to you, that would make you a learned disciple. And the spiritual master, he would be very attentive and appreciative that you were speaking to him what Prabhupada had written to him.
Probably reveals to us the letter he got from his spiritual master.
Yeah.
Well, how significant it was to him. Yeah, just a couple of weeks before Bhakti's Aram passed
away. Yes. And those were times when the different disciples were saying, well, this is what he means, and that's what he means, this is what we should do, no, that's what we should do. And Prabhupada had his letter, so he knew what he should do. Anyone want to ask any other questions or bring anything up? Tomorrow night we're going to talk about lectures, and we'll use a tape recorder a little bit too. All right then. Yes?
I was just going to give an example. You said sometimes just even in smaller services the devotee would become enlivened to do that.
Yeah.
We went to Atlanta, went to Circle, and when Amina was there, she came with flower business.
Uh-huh.
Maharishi must have said to us 3 or 4 times, like, yes, Prabhupada said, flowers bring out the finer sentiments in people. And she was so inspired. She offers all her flowers to Krishna, she donates to the temple.
Mm.
But it was based on this sentence by Prabhupada.
Mm. Yeah, that's nice. All right, Srila Prabhupada.